Today we've got kind of an interesting sidetrack from our normal real estate discussions. But, you know, a big part of why people come to Amelia Island is the lifestyle on Amelia Island. It's all the things that are offered here and the special feeling. And as we approach, we're coming up with the Shrimp Festival coming up in another few weeks. One of the things that we thought would be great to talk about and learn about is how did the festival get started? Why did it get started on Amelia Island? What does shrimping industry mean to Amelia? And we've got an outstanding guest today to talk to us about that. We're very fortunate today to have Thea C. Graves, who is the Education Director at the Amelia Island Museum of History, as our guest. And Thea, welcome to the Miller Group Real Estate Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'll try to help.
Well, you will be a great source of help. And let's start by having you share some background about who you are, what this role is about, what you do in the role, and talk a little bit about that.
Well, okay. I'm the education director here at the museum and have been here for about 17 years. I started my 17th year this year. As education director, part of what I do is gather people from the community, go out, recruit volunteers, right? Because we have 4 full-time staff here. I'm one of the full-time staff. And without other people helping out and carry out the things that we want to provide for guests when they come to Amelia Island, is we have to have volunteers. My job is to get them in here, get them as passionate as I am about it, recruit them, and get them trained so that they can share the history of Amelia and Nassau County.
There's a lot of passion in this, so I know you must be doing a good job because I know a lot of friends that are involved. And
oh,
love
good.
It.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Yes. We have to have volunteers that will help us stay open 7 days a week.
Yeah. That's a big schedule.
Yes, and we are open from 10 to 4 with 2 docent tours inside the museum. And the docents have to go through a training. So when I recruit a volunteer to become a docent, that means that that person has to learn the history of the 8 flags, how Amelia and Nassau County came to be,
right?
Starting as early as the native people who lived here, what brings people here, and then carrying through from the 1500s, the first contact with the Europeans, all the way to present day.
Right.
So as you can imagine, there were people here that lived before the Europeans ever came, and it is recorded that they have been here for over 2,000 years, up to 4,000 years prior to the first European.
And those settlements were
absolutely
large. I mean, weren't they before the Europeans got here?
Yes.
I've heard as much 200,000.
Yes.
Possibly.
Wow. Absolutely.
In the southeastern United States.
And now they're gone.
They were gone. Didn't last a long time.
Not
I know we're
after
getting
their
off
contact.
Topic, but all that interest. I mean, it's fascinating, and that's kind of part of what this is all about here with the museum.
Right.
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is that over the last 2 years with COVID, we haven't had a chance to have a true shrimp festival the way it is normally put on. And there have been so many new people that have moved to the island in the last 2 years that haven't experienced that. So they're going to get their first taste of that.
They sure
are. In the upcoming festival. And that's a very exciting thing. So talk a little bit about, let's talk about why, how did we get started with the shrimp festival here? What created that? And what's the shrimping industry? Let's kind of go back a little bit into why shrimping festival got started and how did shrimping industry get started here on the island?
Well, one of the things that brings people to the island or keeps people here on the island is the fact that you have water. You have water coming, not just the ocean, not just the Atlantic Ocean, but you have 3 rivers that come together. You have the Amelia River, you have the St. Mary's River, and then you have the Cumberland Sound coming off of Cumberland Island and separating, you know, from Georgia.
Right.
So in that, you're going, and because this is a deep water port, many ships can come in here. We have when the Europeans were coming through, I'm back to them again, they had these large-masted schooners. And the harbor is 15 to 17 feet deep at low tide. that means you can bring in
a lot of ships.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. With that, you know anything about shrimps?
A little bit.
You know, they're
bottom feeders?
Yes. Okay. So that makes the tannins that come into this area and settle in this area, it begins to get rather rich. Fish can survive. There's fishing that goes on here. The native people, that's how they lived. Other people coming in here, the establishment of the plantations, and that could have been rice, that could have been indigo, that could have been sea island cotton, whatever. Right. You have this feeding in from the rivers and from the ocean that you're going to have all kinds of plant life and ocean life developing. So when you're looking for a food source, you go and search where you have a variety of different ecosystems going on so that you have a variety of different foods available. So you have a large shrimp population. Now, Europeans come here, the turn of the century, the 1900s, you begin to find a way, you got to make a living that's not just lumber, because not everybody was a lumberman.
And I guess eventually you run out of, there was a concern of that, was it running out of?
Well, that's true.
Supply of lumber?
But, right, and you have to replenish that. Yeah. Okay. But because not everybody's a lumberman, there's other things that have to happen. First of all, they're going to bring in their families. You have to feed those families.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't eat wood. Well, some of us.
Right.
So you start fishing the waters and you start shrimping the waters. And one of the things that you need to be aware of is not only the different nationalities that came here and made their living off of the water, you had slaves that were imported, and they will find ways that they can support themselves and eat that you're not going to get from your plantation owner.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
So they become shrimpers. They become fishermen. And they work with the other people who are not well off to start, and you have this whole population, this community that develops, and they begin to work together in building boats and building ways that you can catch more shrimp and feed all their families. Now, you live here in the county, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're aware of the abundance of land and different people that live here. And we know that in order to keep this place going, you have to have a lot of people that do different things. Because not everybody's a lumberman.
Right.
And we don't want to deplenish all the trees that we have here.
Right. True.
Unfortunately, the shrimp kind of get depleted too.
Yeah.
So we have to broaden our nets to get out there and bring in shrimp from other areas. But when I say other areas, I don't mean outside of Northeast Florida, not outside of
St. Augustine or that.
Right.
Kind of going down.
That's all local. That's all considered local waters. So our shrimp, we might go a little further out, but we still bring that shrimp in here. So any restaurant will have it.
Interesting, the idea of this as an industry, because it started out, I guess, in the late 1800s, it was really fishing off of rowboat types of things.
Yes.
But then there, we had some folks that came in from other countries that had some ideas that really helped build the industry. Italian groups and families that came
in. Italians, Greeks.
And the Greeks.
The blacks that were living here as well, the African Americans. When you begin to put all those ideas together and all these experiences.
And they worked together, didn't they?
They worked side by side. Families grew up together, they worked together, and they developed ways to improve getting as much shrimp as possible in order to make a living.
And these were ways that were new to the industry, not just here locally, but then they spread outside from what they learned from what people kind of created here.
Absolutely. They shared it as far as, what are some of the other places up north, further north that they talked about?
Yeah, well, I know that they went, obviously they shipped all this, I think, up to what, to Philadelphia and New York and a lot of the kind of really became an industry here. There were at one point 250 or more employed in a company that I guess this is around in the early early 1900s.
Early 1900s.
When the Italian families that came and were so creative.
Yeah. it's fascinating.
And you and I were talking about this, but there's a wonderful book that is written by
Gray Edenfield
that I had a chance to read, just trying to get a little background before we talked, and it's terrific, and you have it for sale here at the museum, and it really gives some history about our local history about how we contributed to the shrimping industry and why it was important here at Amelia. I highly recommend it. It's an easy read with some great photography in it, too.
And one of the things I really like about that particular book is Gray had an opportunity to work here, and I was trying to remember. I think it was 5, maybe 7 years. I can't even remember. But he was able to do quite a bit of research here, and he went to school here and grew up here, so that's kind of nice. And his mother worked here as well. And in his book, he put it together in a way that you can understand the history of where it started, mm-hmm. how even the native people were here and lived off of the shrimp and the fishing, and then moving into the Europeans and incorporating the blacks, the Italians, the Portuguese, and the Spanish, too.
Yeah.
And it really was. Amelia Island was the birthplace of the modern shrimping industry. Now, when you say modern, what exactly do you mean?
Yeah.
People ask most of the time. Well, that is developing a way that scrapes the bottom of the waters and where the shrimp get trapped in there without hurting the other animals that are in the water.
Yeah. Okay.
Too, at creating a way for the trap that's trapping the shrimp, but yet had a door opening so that turtles
could escape,
mm-hmm. and other larger creatures could escape. Now, I think to myself, and I said, now, exactly how does that work? I want to go underwater and actually see it.
And see if, yeah.
But you can actually take a river cruise, and it's called one of the eco cruises. And you can learn more about the shrimp and how that trawler thing works.
Interesting.
So though, you know, there's certain people that get all the credit for developing that, just remember everybody has a hand in it
and
to
it,
some degree.
All of them contributed.
All of them contributed.
Ideas, and that's pretty neat.
Right.
Pretty neat.
I like that he points that out.
He does. He really does. He shares that.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I learned in here that I didn't know that's kind of interesting were the Greek families that came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were, their trade was really more in the boat building side. They brought skills from Greece that they had there and then really made some design changes with the shrimp boats that were much more
that
efficient.
That helped too. Mm-hmm.
And one of those families, and I pronounced this correctly, Teleakis.
Teleakis. Yes.
I didn't realize, but obviously that's the same family too that has the Marina restaurant,
yes.
which is now their last week of operation.
I heard that. I heard that they've sold it or they're selling it.
Yeah. And our family has been going there since the 90s, and so we're great fans of Patricia and her family. So that was a neat tie for me to see that and how impactful. And I think that family married into the Dionis family.
Yes.
Which I didn't know either.
Yeah, they're all related.
It was interesting how the shrimping industry really
Well, that's the joy of this. Nassau County is a large county, but it's small. The people here are usually tied into each other some kind of way. And I think that's what kind of keeps me here. And as education director, drives me to get out there and recruit as many people as there are out there that can come in and help share that story too. Because when you have descendants and ancestors all, what stories?
It's great stories.
It's not just the history. It's becomes a big family. And that's some of the passion that develops out of me working here. That's why I've stayed.
That's right. Obviously, the shrimping part was important enough that they wanted to create this festival in, I guess, the mid-60s. Talk a little bit about that, Thea.
1964 is when the shrimp festival, I guess, kind of took off and became a big deal. I mean, what else to do than to celebrate what makes a place so unique and so inspiring and so family friendly than to do something like that. I mean, they were already putting the boats in the water and getting them together and racing and you know, that's kind of how it developed. And personally, I think I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
To be sitting with these fishermen or these shrimpers. And they're all sitting there, they're taking their break, and maybe they're sitting on the set. You know, we ought to just have a party. And I could just see it growing from there. At least that's what it sounded like it happened.
Yeah.
It's kind of that way. And it has grown tremendously in the amount of time that I've been here. Now, you've been here since as early as coming and going?
We moved here permanently in 2001 and been coming certainly since. And my first experience at the Shrimp Festival was 1990.
Ah, okay.
And it was from a vendor standpoint. We owned an ice company business in Jacksonville, and we brought a truck up and supplied all the ice.
Well, there you go.
And that was kind of a fun experience. Crazy too, because we had phones, these that were about this, you know, about a foot tall, that were satellite type phones, cell phones. But in any event, it was a crazy time and fun experience.
Yeah, but I can imagine that they sat and talked about a way to celebrate all that. And in that talking, the women get involved. Let's have a pageant. Let's have the Shrimp Festival Queen or it's not called that. It's called something else. But then to bring in the schools being involved in it too, I think it was a very good thing to do. The artists that live here. Because, and like I said before, what makes this place so unique is all the diversity.
Yeah.
That is here.
Agreed.
And creates a festival. And yes, okay, there's the pirate lore. I'm notorious for pushing the pirate lore because, hey, after all, it is a port town. What can I say?
It's great.
But my main thing is the start of that festival in 1964, and it just grew from there. Because you're going to sample shrimp every which way you can possibly imagine.
True. Absolutely.
We can make even, you know, ice cream
incredible.
Shrimp.
Incredible. It's just amazing. How many, what are we looking at numbers-wise? What would be projected for this year, do you think, in terms of attendance?
I think we're probably looking at 300,000 of people coming through.
Well, over the 3 days.
Over the 3 days?
Yeah.
Possibly more, even though we, let's face it, COVID did bring a stop to the Shrimp Festival twice, and we had a mini one in October.
Right.
And believe it or not, the mini one was just as much fun, as much work.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that yes. Tonight. Sorry. I'm sorry about that.
Things happen in a live office in a show.
check in with Jennifer. She has it on her calendar. I'm in a podcast. You're going to have to bleep that. Anyway.
We'll keep it. It'll make it look more fun.
It's real. It's happening at the museum.
Yeah.
Because it's always happening.
It's always happening.
Anyway, what I was talking about was this shrimp festival. We had a mini one in October, and though we didn't get the huge number of crowds that we did, we still got a pretty good crowd.
Yep.
They had shortened the footprint of it, and we still managed to get a good number of people.
I thought it was great. We came to that, and I thought it was fun.
Good old days.
It was.
When
it
wasn't too many people.
Yep.
This one coming up is, now that we're open and operating, oh my goodness, I could see maybe we'll even go over 300,000.
Yeah, this will be amazing, I think. People are ready and looking forward to it.
I think they are.
Yeah.
Of course, we're kind of at the end of spring break.
Right.
And spring break here lasts for about 2 months because everybody comes from everywhere in the U.S. and visiting. But I think we'll still bring in some pretty good crowds. And let's not forget, the locals have had we've been all pushing and struggling through COVID, all of us. Yeah. This is a time we could show off our wares.
Yeah. And how is, talk about the museum, just to be interested to know from your perspective, how it has progressed through the last 2 years and where we are today, and give a little background on that and thoughts.
Well, prior to COVID, the museum had been involved with raising money to redo all our exhibits. And luckily enough, we had started that process and was raising money, was our capital campaign, and we were in, we were ready to start remodeling. Then COVID hit, so that moved up our remodeling time.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to start with a small cadre of volunteers because it still took them. Remember, I said four full-time staff.
Yeah.
We have some part-time staff, but it's the main four. So we were able to get some volunteers. We're all masked up. And when you're tearing down walls, cleaning brick, re-bricking, I forgot what the word is called, but working on the outside and everything, we all came in, we all had our own space, and we were able to transition during that time. During that time, how were we bringing in revenue? While we worked from home, one of my jobs was to create history that people could take with them.
Hmm.
So basically, it was a camp to go,
or
it was a tour to go, something that people could order online that I had put together, and they were able to go off and order it and come in, actually come to the museum, pick it up, and then go off and enjoy history. So we made that transition.
Made that work,
And during that whole time, we tore down things. We redid everything. We even have floors now instead of carpet or concrete.
Yeah.
Everything was
great.
Freshly painted. We took down walls and redid every single exhibit. So May 1st, last year, we opened up. We had a grand to-do. It incorporated our outside, which we have a history garden that's run by volunteers, as well as the inside. And I think we had 150 people throughout the museum that day.
Wow.
And that was moving through. Yes, it was during the COVID. We were masked up when they were inside, but outside.
It's great, yeah.
You were able to be out there, and we provided food on the outside, and everything was, talk about perfect timing. We didn't have a shrimp fest to organize for. So we did that.
You did that. Well, it sounds like it was a great result and terrific.
That's how we survived. So it's a brand new museum. Come in, take a look, and see how things
are. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful. How many volunteers do you have that participate? What number would you say?
We have a total of almost 300 volunteers.
Wow.
And active ones, I would say we have about 160.
Yeah. Yeah.
162.
That's great. That's
active.
Wonderful. That's great.
Right now. Now, when summer hits, some of them go away.
Yeah.
When the fall comes, most of them come back, and then I'm up to 200 and stuff.
That's a great number.
I've been working on trying to make sure I'm back up to pre-COVID numbers.
Well, that's great. That's
wonderful.
Because
we lost quite a few during that time.
Yeah.
And so my job has been to bring them back.
Well, let me ask, what's your favorite thing about the Shrimp Fest? What would you tell for somebody that's new to our area? What do they be sure
to
experience?
Come to the shrimp booth. All of them. Yeah. Sample as much shrimp all the different ways you can.
Yeah.
Because the booths are run all by nonprofits, including ours.
Right.
We're the only ones that sell shrimp gumbo.
Ah, okay.
So we
special
recipe. It was developed by our executive director's late husband, and we use volunteers to make that gumbo, but it's really good.
Now, I'm
not a big gumbo fan. I've tasted a number of different gumbos, and I would say this is pretty doggone good. So
that'll have to be on top of my list. We'll definitely put that on.
And don't forget to try the shrimp ice cream. I do not know who's going to be selling it, but you got to try that.
Finish it off with the shrimp ice cream.
Absolutely.
Well, and one last thing we wanted to be sure and remind people, because I had a chance to see it and didn't realize, but that you have a shrimp museum, a separate structure. Talk a little bit about that.
The Shrimp Museum is located right on the harbor, Fernandina's Harbor. And for those of you who actually need an address, it's 17 South Front Street, right across from Front and Center. So, perfect place. There you can learn more about the shrimping industry. You read and comprehend how things started and where it went from there and what people are doing now. It's a wonderful place to go. It looks out over the rivers.
It's a great little spot to view.
To just sit and view.
Right there on their deck, they've got a couple of chairs.
Yes,
it's a wonderful spot.
There's some chairs there to sit and enjoy. And it doesn't cost a thing to go into.
Well, Thea, I think this is wonderful. Really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are because we can tell from the phone calls
know,
and the knocks on the door.
Everything's ringing and people are
You've been kind to give us a little time. We had it a few weeks right before the festival, and this has been great and hopefully helpful, too, I think, to new folks in the area.
I hope so. Come and enjoy it. Immensely, yes.
The parade, is there a parade
on
Thursday?
Thursday evening, the parade starts at 6 o'clock. It starts over at Buccaneer Field, which is near Central Park. Starts there, 6 o'clock. People say it's an hour-long parade. I've walked it. It feels like 2 hours.
It's wonderful.
But it's entertaining.
It is.
It is joyful to watch the whole community come together. And I mean, people participated as far out as Callahan, Hilliard, Bryceville, any of the little towns out there that come. Everybody wants to be involved in that. This year, we will not have any walkers because I've recruited everybody for working our shrimp booth. Okay? But you have to see the parade. That's Thursday, April, 28th?
Okay.
6 o'clock it
starts. 6 o'clock.
It comes down Ash Street.
Yep.
All the way to South 2nd.
And then cuts over to Center.
Cuts over to Center Street and goes up Center Street.
East.
And, of course, they will be judging the parade or the entries.
It's a fun way to see the community. People just that get involved, just have a great time, and it's really fun. So I encourage. I think that's a great recommendation. Thea, thank you so much again.
You're
appreciate
so
your time. This
thank
is
you.
Really good, and we wish you the best of luck coming up. And we'll hope people will come join this and come down and see the museum too.
Okay, great. And sorry for the interruptions.
That's understandable. Thank you, Thea.
You're so welcome. Thank you.